Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Issue 121. Ben Flanagan of AL.com. Ben Stark of Wondermill Films.
Ben, how are you?
Doing well, Ben. What's up?
Well, it is summer. We've already had at least one major release come out. Last year, Franco and I did a epic discussion of, summer box office predictions and schedule and everything like that. I thought this year we would do something a little bit more manageable. You and me talk about the overall summer movie season of 2016, if it even exists, referencing my episode with Tyler Smith a few months ago. If there is a such thing as a summer movie season, let's take a look at this year's, take a look at the movies coming out and talk a little bit about what we're looking forward to and what we're thinking will take the cake as far as box office goes. You cool with that?
Yeah, totally.
All right. Last week we saw the release of, or actually 2 weeks ago at this point, saw the release of, would you agree that Captain America Civil War was the first big release of the summer?
Absolutely. And it seems like Marvel now has the stranglehold on the first week of May now. And I know that it sort of makes the summer peak early for many out there, many movie fans who are a little jaded by the summer seasons lately, and this one in particular. And I thought that your podcast about whether or not there's a summer movie season anymore was a great discussion. I happen to be on the side of the fence that thinks there definitely is. I mean, you can look at any summer in the past several years and just identify it as the traditional season where we get this swell of blockbusters one weekend after the other, multiple movies piled on top of each other in a really superfluous way that saturates the summer movie landscape. For me personally, as somebody who has always really loved the summer season and spending a good chunk of my summers in a movie theater and seeing what the studio system has in store for us. And sadly, Sark, this season in particular is just, I say overall it's underwhelming just in terms of the season as a whole, what I think a summer movie season should be. But, I took another look at the list. I made a list of most anticipated stuff, and there's a nice handful of movies that I'm really looking forward to and movies that I can't wait to see. And normally, if I'm just looking at it year to year, I would say that there's a nice handful of movies that I could go see on a given year. And the fact that they're piled into one summer, that should, by definition, make it a really interesting summer, or at least one that has a lot of potential. But I just think the movies that I'm looking forward to see, some of them just aren't your typical summer blockbusters. And I love summer blockbusters when they're great. And they, so many have been over the years, but now they seem few and far between. And I only finally just caught up with Captain America Civil War last weekend. And, I've got all the excuses in the world, but as a big movie fan, I feel like I should have no excuse. I waited way too long to see this, but it was nice to finally slip into a theater that was partially empty to enjoy what will likely be the biggest movie of the summer 3 weeks into the season. And now it's like, well, where do we go from here? Do you feel that way? Are you in that camp that feels like, well, this is it, I guess it's all downhill from here? Or do you think that there's more on the horizon that can make this a summer to remember?
No, I definitely agree. And I feel like that is the case, that it's because Marvel does this thing so well, that they've kind of claimed May. And it is often, I'm almost more excited. The nostalgia I felt when I was a kid for the entire summer, now I basically just feel it for the month of May, and then I'm kind of burned out. And so I feel like that, if I think about the best blockbusters of last year, at least one of them was released at Christmas. A few years ago, Captain America Civil War, one of the best blockbusters of that year, was released in March. So that's kind of where the summer movie season is dying idea comes from. But I think that I agree that if I look at the schedule, there's a few movies that I'm like, I'm looking forward to seeing that, and I'll definitely go see that in the theater. But at the same time, I have to see those titles to remember, if that makes any sense. You know, like, I think I'm just nostalgic for the days where, you know, in March, I could tell you, you know, the three or four huge movies that were going to be coming out that summer, and those that the kind of movies that would be driving my life. Obviously, I'm older now, and that kind of thing just doesn't happen anymore because there's actual valuable things going on in my life. But I do kind of miss those days, and I think that I can honestly say that going into the summer, Civil War was the only one that I knew was going to make a huge dent for me personally. And hopefully, like you're saying, hopefully there's going to be some surprises in here, and I'm certainly not ruling that out. But I do think that, I mean, like you said, Marvel holds this first weekend captive, and you kind of see that in the wake of releases since then. I mean, last weekend we had the Angry Birds movie and The Nice Guys and Neighbors 2, which, you know, none of which really made a big dent. And I feel like that's kind of what we're going to be expecting until this upcoming weekend when we get X-Men Apocalypse. What is there anything else that I'm missing coming out here in the next few weeks?
In the next few weeks, not really. I mean, like you said, we got this past weekend, which was a little underwhelming, just in terms of, like, the big stuff, right, on the radar, because I really want to see Neighbors, too. I love Neighbors, the first Neighbors. I really want to see The Nice Guys, you know, as a fan of Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling. That movie looks like a really great alternative choice to summer blockbusters, and it looks like a lot of fun. So there are movies I really want to see. They're just not the typical summer fare that we're used to. And, you know, maybe that's a good thing. And maybe if it is trending in that direction and they're not piling everything on top of itself in one big lump week to week, then that's probably okay. And if it gives us a little breathing room and helps us look forward to a lot of these blockbusters and helps us catch our breath, then that can't be the worst thing. But I'm not sure if that's deliberate on the studio's part, especially this past week. Because, I mean, like, the Money Monster was the big release a couple of weeks ago. So now, you know, of course, Marvel planned it out nicely, and nobody really wanted to. I'm guessing studios probably wanted to avoid competing with Marvel's second and third weeks at the box office. Angry Birds proved that it wasn't scared and came out on top during Captain America's third week. But yeah, I mean, it's been nice to have a couple of weeks to kind of ignore it in a way and look ahead to what's coming out. So, no, I mean, I guess X-Men is the next big one, and there are definitely a lot coming up, Ben. Like, you know, I say, like, this summer just doesn't seem to scream, whoa, like, there's a lot to be excited about. But I look at it as a whole, again, at this, like, list of 10 movies that I really, really want to see, and I say, well, how bad of a summer could it really be if there's a new Steven Spielberg movie, and there's a new Pixar movie, and there's a new Bourne movie and Star Trek movie, and I'm really excited about the next DC movie that's coming out. And it looks like there are a couple more 3D animated movies that have a lot of potential. So, there again, like, some of these titles scream summer. Like, again, Spielberg and Pixar and Star Trek. But some of them, too, while they're not necessarily, like, indie fare or anything or alternative like The Nice Guys, they're just movies that could open in the spring or the fall or movies that, you know, could just kind of it just doesn't seem like the appropriate season for them. But again, maybe that speaks to your theory.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, even those titles, which I'm all interested in and that have kind of built in interest for me. I feel like there's, with each of them, there's a little bit something to kind of be skeptical about. And you know me, that's not usually the part that I play, but with the BFG, it's not the kind of Spielberg movie that we often, I guess, would like to see in the summer. You know, you kind of want an action movie or something like that, or, you don't necessarily want a Pixar sequel. You can't really expect Inside Out when you're going into a Pixar sequel. And with Star Trek Beyond, there's been some troubled production there and some script issues that have been publicized. And with Bourne 5, you kind of get a feeling that maybe everybody's just in it for a paycheck because, well, what else do they have to do? So that's not to discount those movies because I'm excited for those movies. But at the same time, do you get my point that it's not, you know, it's not like we're looking forward to The Avengers or Mad Max Fury Road or something where it's like, wow, we really don't know exactly what we're going to get, but we know that it's going to be in the mold of something exciting that we've loved in the past. Does that make any sense?
Definitely. There do seem to be strings attached to
yeah.
a lot of
yeah,
things.
You go.
And you're right. Like, there are reasons to be skeptical about all of these movies, but I mean, look, there are reasons to be skeptical about anything, including The Avengers, including Pacific Rim and The Dark Knight Rises, right? Because I mean,
totally.
Like, because when you don't know what to expect, it could be a turd, right? Like, there's always going to be potential for that, but I mean, that's part of the excitement, you know. That summer blockbusters, before you see them, they really build your hope up into really, really anticipating something special at the movie, something you'll want to go back and see over and over again if you have the time or the money. And you know, I don't necessarily see a lot of potential for that yet, and I could be totally wrong. I mean, I went and saw Captain America and immediately wanted to watch that movie again. That movie
yep.
was like a straight IV of junk food, you know, that actually had something interesting to say. So that's kind of a unique summer movie experience, and you know, you can it checks all the boxes for what you want, but it's just going to be disappointing if that's it and that's all we get. And again, like I think there are really like four or five movies that I can't wait to see and that I really hope bring a similar experience and make me feel the same way and reassure me as a movie fan that the studios can give us something, even if so much of what we're getting is so familiar, and all of it pretty much is based on existing properties. I mean, there are like two or three movies that are not sequels, are not remakes, adaptations, reboots. I'm looking at The Nice Guys, Pop Star, the Andy Samberg comedy, and Sausage Party, the R-rated 3D animated movie from Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg. Those are really the only three like original movies where I literally have no idea what to expect aside from my familiarity with past work from the people involved. So, you know, that's something that's exciting about the summer. But in terms of like the big blockbusters that I'm most excited about, BFG is probably number one just because it's Spielberg. Add Roald Dahl to the mix. It sounds like a great match. And I think the trailers look fantastic. And Spielberg always gets a blind pass, and he's earned it, and we're all big, huge fans here at Film Nerds, but I think that movie looks great, and I'm super pumped. But the other ones, like even Finding Dory, I've heard so much skepticism for Finding Dory because, I guess primarily, like you mentioned, it's a sequel, right? And people would say that Pixar doesn't have the best track record for sequels, but I just want to have faith and Andrew Stanton, and I want to have faith in Pixar, and to know that Andrew Stanton is writing and directing a sequel to this original movie that, you know, came from his heart and blood, sweat, and tears. I have to trust that he's going to give it his all, especially in the aftermath of the John Carter debacle. So I'm just going to go in like a dummy and just assume that it's going to be special just because of the brand and the people involved. I mean, we've been burned plenty of times before, but I don't know. Like, I for whatever reason, even though, you know, I'm probably more cynical in my old age, I'm going to go into it with those same high hopes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you there. Do you know what is the release date on Finding Dory? Is that late June?
I don't have the calendar in front of me right now, but yeah, I think it's June.
Yeah, I feel like it's got a placement that I keep forgetting about it, and that's I feel bad about that because I said earlier that it's not that it doesn't have Inside Out levels of potential, but it's Pixar, so every Pixar movie, unless it has the Cars word in the title, has in its own way has the potential to be their best movie, you know. So even I love Monsters University. I think that movie is great. And
yeah, how about the Toy Story sequel?
Yeah, Toy Story sequel. So their track record with sequels aren't nearly as bad as people make it out to be.
Exactly.
But there is, I don't know, there is something about it that maybe it is that Stanton kind of trying to get his sea legs back element to it. But
Stanton,
something oh, God. There's something about it that that keeps kind of making it tumble off my radar, and I'm not sure. I think my number one most anticipated of the summer is the BFG as well. I think your brother has mentioned some skepticism for the CGI, and I think that's a fair note about it, but I think that also it's something I'm willing to go with, and I trust Spielberg to buy me into it within moments of the movie starting. And I think these trailers have been marvelous. And I think there's an emotional chord that they're striking that it has the chance to send me out of the theater shaken the way that I walked out of the theater last year with Inside Out. So I think, like you said, the Roald Dahl factor, of course, Melissa Matheson is involved. It looks beautiful. It's got a John Williams score, I think, that may blow us away. So I feel like that, yeah, there's... It seems like nobody's really talking about it. There's a chance that it makes $0, but I do think that it's my most anticipated of the summer now that Civil War has passed.
Well, what
by.
Are people talking about though? Because I look up and down the list and I think like, well, okay, I can't wait for the BFG, but surely that's not going to be my number one most anticipated. Let's see, what else is there? Well, I guess it is, and that's okay because it's a big, bright, colorful Spielberg adventure, and it's a Roald Dahl adaptation, so, you know, it's as good as any, but I just am kind of scratching my head because nobody's really talking about anything right
yeah.
now. I haven't really heard, other than, like, some jokes about Independence Day resurgence or again, before Captain America certainly came out, I just haven't really heard anybody. I haven't really seen the whether it's the Twitter conversation or actually talking to people face-to-face say anything like, oh, I can't wait to see this. I'm counting down, you know, until I go stand in line or I can't wait to see the midnight show of blanks. That's just not really happening for summer 2016.
Yeah, I'm close to that on Star Trek Beyond. I think at this point the new trailer and that freaking poster that they released are both really great and remind me of, oh, right, Star Trek. I love Star Trek. Even the worst Star Trek movie is still a really fun, wonderful movie. And the change of behind-the-scenes personnel on this one is interesting enough to get me pretty excited. And I feel like as the weeks ramp up to that, I'll probably be getting to that level. Honestly, though, I think the buzziest thing of the summer, other than Civil War, not surprisingly, is another major comic book property that you mentioned, and that's Suicide Squad. I do think that that's one movie that it's whether it's good marketing or whether it's just a conceit that everybody is interested in, it's gone from being this thing that people have kind of like flagged and kind of snarked about and then, you know, had opinions on Jared Leto. And now I feel like it's become this other thing. Maybe it was the success of Deadpool or, new trailers being released, but it does seem like people are starting to get legitimately excited for that, which means that I think that it could be a pretty big hit as well. So I do think that I feel like there's more buzz for that than any other movie this summer. So that's, you know, left on the schedule.
That's my number two, Suicide Squad. And you and I have talked about that movie a couple of times on Film Nerds Unlimited. And from the get-go, since that first trailer came out, I've been totally on board, and I think it's been totally consistent in tone in the three trailers that they've released so far. And I for one think the marketing has been fantastic for it, and it's completely sold me, and I don't need to see anything else, but I'd be open to it just because of how much of I've enjoyed it so far. But I'm just so ready to see that movie. See, that's one where it's like, I have to wait until August to see this after all of this good marketing and these really amazingly edited trailers. That sucks, but that's, you know, it's the good kind of sucks, right? Like where it's like, wow, I've really got something to look forward to all summer, you know, and if
and,
it disappoints, then it disappoints, and it's just another August summer disappointment. But yeah, I can't wait to see that movie. What I'm interested in now is if they're, you know, like you said, if they mean to be successful, are they going to go with the R or the PG-13, or like you said, are they gonna look at Deadpool and say, look, this won't matter if people love it, and let's just go full R?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that'd be interesting, and there would be a really neat 90s approach to it then, you know, where in the 90s we had these R-rated movies that we would anticipate, like The Rock or Con Air, you know, or stuff like that, that it's like, well, I guess I'm going to have, or there's Something About Mary, you know, I guess I'm going to have to sneak into the theater to see this, but that's not going to stop me from, you know, from anticipating it. And I think that that's cool. I think that every summer needs that. If you look at the greatest movie summer of all time, 1982, you had The Road Warrior in there, you know, and you had movies that, The Thing, that served, but you also had The Secret of NIMH and E.T. You have movies that serve all audiences, and I feel like that's a mark of a good summer. So I kind of hope that Suicide Squad does give us something different. Just for the sake of variety. And, you know, when was the last time that we anticipated an August movie? It was probably Guardians of the Galaxy, which is clearly a vibe that they're going for, at least in the trailers with this.
Yeah, to an extent. You know, like, that's the thing is, I think that DC has honestly been cursed, and I'm sure that a lot of it is self-inflicted with the just constant comparisons to Marvel and what that cinematic universe has accomplished and what it's still doing. And you know, people have correctly pointed out that DC is, you know, they want what Marvel has. And sadly, you know, there are instances where they're just trying to, you know, recreate with its own brand what Marvel has done so far. And that's just not something that's not a vibe I personally get from Suicide Squad. This feels like something totally different than what we've seen from DC so far in terms of look, in terms of tone, in terms of performance. And to me, it looks kind of special in a few different ways. And that's why I'm so excited about it. And
yeah. I mean, I'm not trying to be reductive. I'm just saying it's a movie about a gang of misfits superheroes, and it's scored.
No, you're exactly right.
An old classic rock song, and it's
you're exactly right.
August,
you're exactly right.
I mean.
But look,
yeah,
look, that I can't wait to see it. I'm pumped for it. It might blow because it stars Jai Courtney and Joel Kinnaman and Scott Eastwood and Bland Guy and Bland Guy and Bland Guy. You know, and like it's just it seems like a recipe for no, and it's like, but there are just things, I don't know, there are just things that, like, it's weird, because you watch these trailers, and it's like, huh, Jai Courtney seems interesting, and he seems like one of the better parts of this thing. Joel Kinnaman sounds interesting. I don't know what Scott Eastwood's doing, but whatever. But, yeah, I mean, everything else, the Margot Robbie, the rest of the cast, it just looks, I don't know, man, like, I just really dig the vibe of this movie and its marketing so far. And like, everything I've said so far, like, I haven't even brought up Jared Leto. Like, I think that's the strength of the marketing, really, is that they haven't really emphasized Jared Leto so much, and they've made it a star performance, and they've hidden a lot of him and only given you very tiny glimpses of him and his Joker in the trailers. And, you know, I don't think they're hiding it because it could hurt their marketing. I think that's the strength of their marketing. And so I think that they've got smart people behind this one, and maybe it's something that can permeate throughout the rest of DC. Hopefully, if this happens to be good and if they have good movies in the pipeline, maybe this August release will give it new life and sort of in the way that, you know, certain studios have like Marvel has grabbed onto the first week of May, and other studios have sort of you know, poached Thanksgiving and spring. Maybe DC has an opening here in August where, you know, it can take its movies. So maybe it can lay the groundwork for future summer events.
Yeah, I mean, I'm open to it. And if I was to make like a, maybe a, it may crack my like top five most anticipated of the summer. Maybe it or at least be in that top 10. But,
okay, so how about we just kind of start at this upcoming weekend and then go through the summer kind of moment, like movie by movie, really quick on some of them, and then, you know, if there's any that stand out to us either way in terms of interests or notable disinterest, let's just do that.
Let's do it.
All right. So obviously we already talked about X-Men Apocalypse this weekend. There's also Alice 2, The Looking Glass. Where are you at on that?
I'm not at on that.
Me neither.
Yeah, zero interest in Alice, and quite honestly, been almost zero interest in X-Men Apocalypse, even though Bryan Singer's directing. Even though,
yeah,
I mean, if you told me Bryan Singer is directing a cast including Oscar Isaac, Michael Fassbender, James McAvoy, and Jennifer Lawrence, I would think, hey, okay. But the fact that it's the 19th X-Men movie, it I don't know if this franchise has just become watered down as a result of just existing for so long, and maybe it's just a reflection of fans' interest in the fact that I'm personally shocked that they haven't chosen to reboot this. I know that in a way they kind of did with First Class, and how they've sort of blended them now with Days of Future Past, and those were fun movies, but at this point I'm just kind of done with this version of X-Men. And you know, I hate reboots personally, but if ever there was a franchise that kind of needed a shot in the arm via reboot, it might be X-Men.
Yeah, I mean, I admire how creative they've been with keeping that continuity going. And honestly, the last two movies, The Wolverine and Days of Future Past, have been two of the three best movies in the series, in my opinion. So I have no reason to think that this won't be interesting, but I'm with you. I think just looking at the trailers, it looks like a movie that's 17 movies in, like you were saying. You know, it looks like, well, I guess we'll do a big monster thing where everything sucks up of all the cities, you know, and we just have a giant cast, and I don't know. It's just, I don't doubt that Bryan Singer will figure out some way to make the conflict personal the way that he has done in his X-Men movies. But yeah, I'm with you. I think just from a, honestly, just from an aesthetic standpoint, it seems like they're kind of, they're not content to do the simple thing that they did early on in the movies. So they're just going to go bigger and bigger just because, well, why the hell not? We've got the money.
You know, yeah, you're right. And well, what's crazy, though, is Bryan Singer, I think, even with Days of Future Past kind of suggesting that the series is kind of running on fumes in a way, even though that movie's pretty fun overall, I think it's just kind of reaching its end. There are moments in that movie where I see Bryan Singer as someone tapping into new things creatively. And I know I've waxed hyperbolic about the Quicksilver sequence, just like everybody has in that movie, but that's one of those big moments. And, you know, it's great to see that director find a character like that inspires him to try new things and to do something really exciting on the big screen. I mean, I left that theater immediately wanting to see that again, and even now several years later I'm excited about that moment, and I got, you know, I hit YouTube every so often to watch it, or if it's on cable I'm definitely sticking around to watch it. So I'm excited to see what else he does with that character in this movie, but there, like you said, there are a million characters in it, so I don't know how much time he's going to have.
Yeah, and I mean, part of me, I just kind of I long for the days of simple Bryan Singer. You know, when he could give us something as small, you know, relatively and character-driven as the Usual Suspects or Valkyrie. I don't necessarily love him as
this big of a blockbuster film. I mean, even Superman Returns looks like a small movie, you know, compared to this. So that's another thing. But I think you're right. I think he's using these movies as a way to play with some ideas and then stitch those ideas together with whatever crazy story that, you know, the studio demands. Okay, so June 3rd sees Me Before You with Emilia Clarke and some dude. Also, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows. Where are you at on that one?
In the Shadows, actually. I choose to
You're
remain
not gonna
there.
Show up for Seamus?
No, is Seamus in it?
Yeah, he's Bebop.
No, I'm not gonna show
up.
Yeah, dude.
He's Bebop or Rocksteady. I can't remember which. I can't remember if he's the Warthog or the Rhino. Yeah, that movie looks like nightmare fuel.
I'm actually speechless. I'd rather see the Emilia Clarke movie.
Well, also that weekend, you won't have to. Also that weekend is Popstar, Never Stop, Never Stop, Never Stopping, the new Lonely Island movie. They haven't had a movie since Hot Rod, I think. Where are you at on it?
I can't wait. It's on my list of must-sees this summer, and you know, I'm a huge fan of The Lonely Island. They're brilliant, and I've been waiting for their next movie ever since the painfully underrated Hot Rod, which was a great comedy,
and
it's just got laughs for days, and those guys just have such a unique sense of humor and such a great chemistry, and, you know, I hope to see more of Yorma and Akiva on screen this time. I fear... Now that Andy Samberg seems to be best friends with everybody in Hollywood, that it's going to be like sort of maybe not on the level of like a Zoolander 2, but it's just going to be riddled with celebrity cameos playing themselves, you know, just because let's like stuff as many as we can in there just because we can, but honestly, I think it's going to be hilarious just because pretty much everything these guys have done will be, and I can't wait for the original music attached to it.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a cameo in the new trailer, which I recommend nobody watches because it ruins so many of the jokes. It looks really funny, though, and there's a cameo late in that trailer that gives me hope because it's such a creative cameo. It's kind of an obscure cameo, but it's still totally, it's really funny, and it makes perfect sense. So I'm hoping that just because he can doesn't mean that he will, and that he chooses his social capital. He uses his social capital wisely. Let's see. The following week we have Duncan Jones's Warcraft. As in World of.
So
how you feeling about Warcraft?
I don't really know what to say here, frankly. Like, I didn't play World of Warcraft. I don't play World of Warcraft, so I should say that. I don't have any opinion on the video game. I know everybody loves it, or the people that love it.
Gross nerds.
Yeah, okay. He said it. I don't understand why they didn't call it World of Warcraft, you know, the movie or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I don't get that because, whatever. I don't want to analyze it too much. Here's the thing. People were and I hate to use past tense, really excited about Duncan Jones as a filmmaker. And I guess when they announced he was making the World of Warcraft movie, people who liked that game were probably pretty pumped that the guy who made Moon was making their movie, and somebody who seemed to have a real unique sensibility when it comes to science fiction, and he could do something that had vision, you know, according to the universe that game has created, but... Just everything that they put out there with this movie has just been disturbingly bad. And I don't understand how somebody of his, I don't want to say caliber yet, but somebody who has done what he's done and has as much potential as he clearly has, could give us something that just looks like such a stew of CG just mayhem mess. Like, and I hate to reduce it just to that because I want to give Duncan Jones more credit, you know, and give him the benefit of the doubt and assume that there's more than meets the eye. But I don't know. I mean, like, there are so many more movies coming out this summer whose marketing have given me a greater feel, good or bad, for what those movies will be, and I just fear that that movie is going to feel exactly like it looks.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where there's so many artists that are working on that movie, you know, that have to be so technically proficient. People are putting their lives on hold to work on that movie because of the amount of labor that they have to put into those effects. But there's, at the same time, like, you look at the trailer and there's just a weightlessness. And it's one of those situations where you're like, if we had to go to these lengths to tell this story, maybe we shouldn't have, or maybe we should have changed the story to make this work with regular actors wearing tooth prosthetics or something like that. You know, it's just, there's so much digital stuff there that there's nothing left and that has any sort of real reference or gravity or anything like that. And it just looks overwhelming. And I feel like we certainly don't want to judge the movie before it exists. But at the same time, it does seem like a situation where the machine won, you know, and it took one of our filmmakers and kind of chewed him up a little bit. But hopefully we're wrong, and hopefully it's a, you know, because there's plenty of heavily, you know, that we like the Hobbit movies, and those have tons of CGI in them, and this kind of looks like Jabron of the Rings. It just looks like a Lord of the Rings knockoff. But, I can't imagine that it's going to pan out extremely well, but I'm trying to stay open-minded.
Maybe the action's awesome. Hopefully, it's interesting you say the Hobbits, because do you remember the Duncan Jones, Ryan Johnson Twitter feud that ensued?
Honestly, between that and this this intro that he has on certain IMAX prints of the trailer, where it's like a long take of him introducing the movie and he looks very uncomfortable on camera, between that and that Twitter war with Ryan Johnson that he lost horribly, I feel real bad for Duncan Jones these days. It seems like he's just had a tough year, it seems like.
Yeah, well, obviously with the loss of his
dad,
you know,
sure.
Which sucks. And
which I certainly don't want to make light off. Yeah, make light of it all.
No, certainly not, and that's horrible. And, I mean, everybody, fans lost an icon, he lost his dad, and you have to consider that, and I'm sure that, you know, aspects of that will be reflected in the movie, whether, you know, things have happened in post-production, whether he's had to distance himself from whatever elements of completing the movie. And, you know, I'm sure that those are things that fans can forgive about his contributions. If they even happen, maybe he was able to lose himself in it, you know, and maybe that's good for him as a person and an artist. And, you know, you just hope for the best for the guy in his career and obviously his personal life, that things go well. But yeah, I mean, back to the Twitter war, it just to me reflected a guy. And look, I don't know how much of that was serious. And I assume that he and Ryan Johnson are probably friendly. And I think by the end of it, they kind of, you know, suggested that, this was in good fun. But it came across as pretty nasty.
Yeah.
You know, it came across as a guy who was feeling nasty and perhaps was unhappy with where he was, you know, and was I don't want to say jealous of the opportunity Ryan Johnson obviously had, but yeah, it just didn't, it as the kids say, it wasn't a good look for Duncan Jones. And, you know, I just hope that, I hope this movie's good, and I hope it's better than we're assuming that it is, and I hope that he can get back on track creatively.
Yeah, if nothing else, I think it'll make a lot of money, and I think that that's good for him, because then he can, you know, assess his decision and go from there. Also this weekend, we got more Magic Thieves with Now You See Me 2, and more Ghost Clapping with The Conjuring 2. Any interest in either of these?
More so Conjuring 2. Zero interest
yeah.
in Now You See Me 2. Zero. Like, that first movie made me angry watching it. Like, I hated every character in it. Hated it. Hated the way the movie was paced. Hated the story. And look, I would watch Now You See Me 2 if pressed, but this is just one where I got no interest in sitting in a movie theater to watch that. And The Conjuring, I wasn't as on board with The Conjuring as a lot of people. It's definitely had its moments, and I'm sure this one will too. And James Wan is certainly talented and a guy who's become a reliable horror filmmaker, I think, to an extent. if maybe a little overrated just in terms of the movies made. But again, I don't see throwing down the bucks to see this on the big screen. Personally, I'll probably take that weekend off.
Yeah, I think I agree. Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of The Conjuring, and James Wan is an interesting director, and I love his decisions in his career. And it's weird that he took this. You know, it seems like he didn't really need this movie after making a Fast and Furious movie, but he decided to. So that makes me think there's something here that's worthwhile, but the trailer doesn't really do an awful lot for me. And I really didn't need a second movie after the first one.
Well, it's weird because every time I see a new horror movie trailer at the theater, like, there are just so many that are so similar.
Yeah.
I think this is the Conjuring 2 trailer. And then, like, four times this has happened, and four times it hasn't been the Conjuring 2. Like, so I'm not even sure I've seen the Conjuring 2 trailer.
It's the one where the crosses spin upside down on the wall, which is real dumb. It's real dumb that the ghosts would go to that, you know. That's a lot of work. And to do it, like, in cascading order, that seems like a lot of coordination. Seems like a waste of time on the ghost part. So the next week we talked about Finding Dory. I think there's a new trailer out today that I won't watch because I'm just going to go see this movie in the theater. Anything else you wanted to touch on?
With Finding Dory, there are TV spots playing right now that seem to be revealing absolutely nothing. And, you know, they seem like overdubbed, you know, and very quickly edited, not revealing much about the story outside of, you know, Ellen DeGeneres shouting, "Hey, where am I? Where am I going? Or, you know, where's my family?" All this stuff. Like, that's it. And I don't know if that's confidence in protecting the story or if it's a lack of confidence in not wanting to show any, you know, that.
Or maybe.
It's not going to deter any kids from going to see it, though. I mean, I think this is going to be a smash hit.
Maybe it's a Terrence Malick movie where there's, like, literally no story and it's just them floating around saying, "Where are we? Where are we going?"
Andrew Stanton might be in that place after John Carter. You never know, but no, look, it's an Andrew Stanton Pixar movie. I'm there. That's the end. It's over.
Yep.
Like, even if it's a sequel, who cares? It's Andrew Stanton. It's Pixar. You could say one or the other, and I'd be in the theater.
Agree. Where are you at on Central Intelligence?
I think the Rock and Kevin Hart are funny guys and talented guys. I can't say that I love many of their movies lately, and, you know, The Rock is a guy whose career is still a head-scratcher to me, and we've talked about modern action and the potential for modern action heroes and how he should be today's Arnold Schwarzenegger, and for whatever reason, it just hasn't been in the cards, and, you know, he clearly has comic sensibilities and has certainly veered in that direction as of late. But, you know, I just think the guy should be making straight action movies. And if they happen to be funny, that's great. But Central Intelligence, while it looks fine and looks, you know, it'll probably be a hit because those guys are incredibly marketable and appealing. And, I mean, people like them and they're funny. And I'm guessing that because of The Rock's involvement, it'll probably have good action to accompany the jokes. But I just can't say, like, it just looks like more of the same from both of those guys. And while it looks totally harmless, it's not anything that has me excited.
I see what you're saying. I think that Central Intelligence looks pretty funny, but I agree with you that you kind of wish that your action stars were action stars first and not comedy stars. It makes you wish for the days of Richard Donner and John McTiernan to take a hold of one of these franchises instead of these basically comedy directors that are running these. I think it actually looks pretty good except for that horrifying CGI fat high school version of The Rock in that first trailer.
Ben, we're both admittedly wrestling fans. When it comes to The Rock and his talent in that capacity, do you feel like he was more of a physical performer, or do you think he brought way more to the table on the mic? Is that his primary sort of source of, energy and talent as an entertainer? Or do you think that that's something that has now translated to the cinematic level now that he has, you know, made the transition?
No, I mean, I think one of the great things about him was that he combined the two, and so I think that's what makes him a great performer. I mean, he's in a way almost like a song and dance man. You know, he's a Fred Astaire type that can deliver lines and deliver action. So I do think now he's often used for comedy, and I think that left to his own devices, he's not necessarily the funniest guy on the planet. He has good potential, but I definitely think that he's, I don't know, I think he's equal parts of both.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, but I mean, he was very funny when he was funny in the WWE. Now, I can't say the same is true when he makes appearances today, now that he's a star, but back when he was at his high point as a professional wrestler, he was arguably, he goes down as arguably one of the funniest guys in the business. So,
sure, but that's,
all I'm saying is that it just doesn't surprise me that he sort of leans comedy now that he's a movie star.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. And I don't think I've ever seen him in a role where he's super serious. I just think that, look, if you're going to be in an action movie, let's make it an action movie. You know, Lethal Weapon was both. We can do both.
Well, San Andreas was pretty straight.
Didn't see it and had no interest because, that's not what I'm talking about when I say it. Again, I'm wanting something in the Lethal Weapon,
right?
True Lies category. You know, where the action is the best action you'll see in the theater in a given year, not just the second unit stuff that a comedy director, you know, approves in post production.
Yep, and those movies are funny too.
Yeah, absolutely, very funny. All right, well, so moving on, I mean, you mentioned San Andreas, clearly a nod to the city-destroying mayhem of Roland Emmerich, and June 24th, sees it's the first one was ID4. This one is being released on the 24th, so why didn't they call it ID24 is a great question. It's Independence Day Resurgence. We've talked a little, actually you and Matt talked a little bit about the latest, or one of the latest trailers for this. I mean, this is one of those movies that when I was 13, you know, we were already talking about, wow, what would a second Independence Day look like? And now that it's around, now that it's out, I don't care. It's just 20 years have gone by of movies like this, and nothing in this film looks... It looks entertaining for sure, but it doesn't look interesting. It surely doesn't seem like this. I mean, really, this is, if you ask Hollywood, this is one of the biggest offerings of the year.
You know, when you flip 13 to 31, you see Independence Day in a very different light, or at least the potential for an Independence Day sequel, because at 31, I still think Independence Day, the original, is one of the most awesome things ever. You know, like, I still see it through a young person's eyes, because when I saw the first movie in the theater, it legit blew me away. I mean, it was perfect for my sensibilities as a moviegoer, and I personally think it holds up, and maybe that's nostalgia talking, but I don't care. That said, when they announced the sequel, I did kind of roll my eyes, and when I saw cast members announced, other than Jeff Goldblum, who's great, and Bill Pullman, and these other actors and actresses who are reprising their roles, who are great in the first one, you know, Liam Hemsworth doesn't get me all that excited, right? And when I see his name attached to a movie, I think, well, he wasn't their first choice. No offense to Liam Hemsworth or anything. But I will say that the trailer actually won me over a little bit. And this has sort of skyrocketed to that middle-of-the-pack, take-it-or-leave-it group of movies for summer 2016. I am definitely willing to pay to see this movie. And if I've got nothing better to do on a Saturday or whenever, I'll definitely take it in. I mean, it looks like the best thing Roland Emmerich has done in a long time. I'm not sure what that says, but I, at least as somebody who has appreciated the first half of his career, think that's probably a good thing.
In the Entertainment Weekly summer movie preview, there's this little side column quote for Roland Emmerich where he talks about, like, how much of the original was practical, but now he gets to do everything in CGI, and he's like, most of the people in this movie are CGI. And he's saying, I mean, it's written, I'm assuming, in the tone where it's like, oh, wow, this is what technology can do for us. But just reading it, it's just sends a chill down your spine, and you realize, I don't know, again, looking at the trailer, it looks like this guy is, to quote another Jeff Goldblum performance, it looks like a kid that's found his dad's gun. You know, it's just wielding the power of CGI in a way that is troubling, and it just doesn't look, there's visually nothing going on there. It looks like the back plates of X-Men Apocalypse. You know, there's the CGI, a screensaver of a city being pulled up by some sort of gravitational force. It's just noise. It looks like noise. I'll be there opening weekend.
Well, he needs it. He really does, because, I mean, his last few movies just really went nowhere. They flew under the radar. And, I mean, even when he tried different things like Anonymous and in obviously 10,000 BC, which was horrible to me, then his gay rights movie Stonewall, starring Jeremy Irvine from Warhorse, nobody saw that. And if
what?
They did,
I've
they,
never
they
even
didn't
heard
talk
of that.
About it. Yeah, he made a movie just like over the weekend, you know, sometime, and it got no push whatsoever, and I think it angered a lot of people too, and they thought that, you know, while it may have meant well, it missed the mark on whatever it was doing. You know, maybe that is partially the story of Roland Emmerich's career, but I mean, the guy's strength is an action, you know, hyper scaled up director, you know, a guy who has made good disaster movies. Obviously one of the great alien invasion movies, and has a talent for using special effects and blending that into action, whether you like his movies or not. I think the guy is at times a fun director, and is somebody who is capable of telling these very simple but endearing enough stories at a massive scale using those special effects in a way that you know, provides an element of wonder, even that you ask yourself, wait, this is a movie that I'm watching, right? Like, I can't believe, yeah, you know, we're past the point of like, wow, I can't believe I'm seeing this. I've never seen this before. But like you said, he's dialing it up past 11 when it comes to the destruction and the special effects with this. And it seems like he's going to go big or go home. And, you know, at least he's swinging for the fences. If he strikes out, that remains to be seen.
Yeah. And I'm okay with I like how they built up the mythology of the world, where they've integrated the alien technology and all that stuff. So I think it's clever. I think it's a clever approach. It was something that we knew was going to happen someday. The effects are troubling, but also, I mean, you mentioned Liam Hemsworth. It's a lot of these kind of legacy sequel things where it's the old cast coming in to kind of, you know, sweep off the mat, the red carpet for the new cast. And that worked so far. I think it's worked once with The Force Awakens, but
Star Trek to an extent.
Yeah, sure, but that wasn't the whole old cast. You know, that was a little handoff. But yeah, I'll give you that one too. But yeah, it's definitely like it's like Expendables 3. You know, where it's, you know, they're trying to reintroduce this new young cast, and it's these people that you've never seen before and you have no connection to. And they're just these whatever attractive models that happen to be able to deliver lines.
Yeah, and I don't think Jean-Claude Van Damme's going to roundhouse kick a bayonet into Liam Hemsworth's chest in this movie in the opening 15 minutes, but we'll see.
Spoilers. Yeah, spoilers.
Yeah, totally. And let me make one last point about Independence Day Resurgence. The fact that they recast Mae Whitman with the actress from It Follows, I apologize for forgetting her name right now, it's just a disappointing reflection to Hollywood, and this has been true for, you know, since the Hollywood studio system emerged, right, where you want to cast the hot young it girl in your movie, even if it's not necessarily what's best for the project. And she's a talented young woman, don't get me wrong, and I'm glad she's found work at this level, and It Follows is really good, and I look forward to the rest of her career. But it's just disappointing because Mae Whitman is a perfectly capable, beautiful young actress who could have reprised this role, and by all accounts, it sounded like she would have done it had they come calling, but she never got the phone call, and it became sort of a social media outrage, one that I think was just, and I mean, if you've watched Scott Pilgrim and The Duff, which is an underrated teen comedy, then you know she's extremely talented, she's funny, she's endearing, and that's just a weird, nasty little subplot that emerged during the making of ID 424 that it's just super disappointing. And, you know, just I'll be one of those out there who says, I wish Mae Whitman was along for this Destructo ride.
You think that was Liam? You think Liam made that call? And he's like, I'm not going to act with that.
Yeah, Liam has that power.
He's like, do you know who my brother is? he's like the Loki of the Hemsworth family. So, speaking of the Duff, this is a bizarre, obscure segue that I'm calling out. The Duff has one shot in it that features my friend, my actor friend, Kurt Krause, who is in a short film that I made called Dead Saturday. He is also a short scene in Free State of Jones, which comes out that weekend, starring Matthew McConaughey. It's a Gary Ross movie. Any feelings on this one?
Well, first off, hell of a segue there.
Yeah, I'm proud.
Yeah, you know, I have some feelings on it because, you know, I want to see a good Civil War movie. I think there are a handful of them out there. And, you know, Matthew McConaughey remains on what I guess is a hot streak right now as a leading man. I mean, the guy has had just a killer past 3 years. And so I'm anxious to see the projects that he chooses during this hot streak. And this certainly is in that category. And most of all, Ben, I like Gary Ross's work as a director. I love Pleasantville. I love Seabiscuit. I think The Hunger Games is a good movie. I think the guy has serious chops as a director and a storyteller, and it's interesting that the projects he chooses. I think the guy has an interesting take on American history. So, I this is kind of a subversion of the Civil War movie genre, and it seems like a really interesting story. And for those reasons, I'm definitely interested. But again, it just doesn't feel like typical summer movie fare. But if it's what we get, it's what we get.
Yeah, I don't know. Something about it reminds me of like the '90s. You know, when you'd get Braveheart in the summer. This, or even The Patriot. Maybe a bad example. But there's something about this that I like. It's this kind of throwback. It feels like an Edward Zwick movie or something like that. So I'm very interested. And I think the trailer looks really good. Hopefully it doesn't spoil too much of it. It seems like it at least reveals one really cool kind of, you know, impromptu fight scene that I wish I didn't know about. But overall, I think it looks pretty strong. And, it's one of those that I think looks great, but once it's out in theaters, I may have trouble justifying the trip. I'll save that for my second viewing of Independence Day Resurgence.
Hey, and congrats to your boy.
Yeah, absolutely. Real quick, a note on The Shallows, which is a movie I didn't know anything about until recently, and it's about a lady stuck on a rock surrounded by sharks, and it's a pretty cool premise. It's Blake Lively, who I only know from Green Lantern, which is not good. Any thoughts on The Shallows?
Well,
it's basically open water on a rock.
Well, once you said Blake Lively, I decided I'm good.
Yeah. It's one of those that it seems kind of neat, and it's from the director of Nonstop, the Liam Neeson airplane movie, which was pretty good. Which was pretty decent for what it was. So I feel like he may bring something interesting to this, but it's a red box, I think for sure. Okay, so we're getting into July. The big 4th of July release that's going to blow away the box office. You think I'm talking about the BFG, but I'm talking about The Legend of Tarzan.
Well, do you really think that?
Edgar Rice Burroughs sells movie tickets. I think we've found that out. No, I think I think it looks pretty good. It looks really good. I like the approach that they're coming at it with. I like David Yates a lot. I think the casting is visually at least impressive. I don't know Alexander Skarsgård's work, but he looks the part. He's got some abs. Margot Robbie, of course, is a good actress. Christoph Waltz is always a good villain. So I think, and the trailer looks pretty awesome. It just looks kind of cool, but I think I'm the only one that I know that A, even knows it's coming out, and B, is impressed by it.
No, I think everything you say is correct. I just am exhausted at the thought of another Tarzan movie. It like reminds me of another Peter Pan movie or another Jane Eyre movie, to stick with the big blockbuster theme here. But you know what I mean? Like, how many of these do we need? I mean, do we need one every 5 to 10 years or so? And I know that there have been like almost a million Tarzan movies, which, you know, there's a great history there with the old, 1930s movies from that era, like
Johnny Weissmuller.
Yeah, and those are really fun. I mean, those are actually great action movies, like in general, like not even accounting for the era in which they came out. They're just a ton of fun. So there's tons of potential with the property and with the character, and it seems like they're doing something interesting with it. But I just can't say, like, the prospect of another Tarzan movie really gets me going, and I'm still enjoying the aftermath of the Disney Tarzan.
Well, yeah, that's a great one. But what about Tarzan and the City of Gold, starring Casper Van Dien?
That one. It's next on the Netflix queue.
For sure, yeah. Make sure you get the Blu-ray.
After the Christopher Lambert Tarzan.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I would tend to disagree. Didn't tend to agree with you, but then I think about, I think the last Tarzan movie that was even on my radar was the Disney one, and that was 17 years ago, and it was a different approach than this, so I'm kind of okay with this. Also, I mean, we get so many Sherlock, you know, adaptations, probably more than Tarzan, and we've just had one really good one on BBC and one pretty decent one with Robert Downey Jr., so I don't know. I think it's one of those characters that it's like Batman or Superman or James Bond, where I'm okay getting a different version every few years, and I feel like it's been a while since we've had one like this. Again, the amount of CGI in here is a little bit troubling when you're talking about a movie about literally the opposite of technology. Why do we need so much technology to make it happen? But I think it's I'm encouraged, and again, David Yates, one of his two movies coming out this year, and I think I'm pretty excited for it. Of course, we already talked about the big one that weekend for us is the BFG. And boy,
can I make
what
one
a
quick
box
point?
Office weekend. Yeah, go ahead.
Let me make one quick point about it. Something that's a little discouraging for me as a fan of Christoph Waltz, after obviously his work after his big debut in the U.S. with Inglourious Basterds, I think a lot of people feared that he'd be relegated to being typecast as sort of a mustache-twirling villain in big Hollywood movies, and that's largely been true in his career, and that is seemingly the case here with the Tarzan movie, and I hope that somebody with the, you know, his talent, the level of his talent, gets better big Hollywood opportunities. And, you know, look, he has had the opportunity to work with guys like Tim Burton and Michelle Gondry and obviously now with David Yates and obviously Tarantino since that debut. So he's gotten his share of opportunities. It's just kind of a shame that it's followed the path that everybody predicted it would. And
sort of
middling results.
You mentioned those characters. I mean, except for the Tim Burton, really. I mean, those were all mustache-twirling villain characters.
Oh,
I mean, throw
the
Sam Mendes on that list.
The big eyes character is the most mustache-twirly character of them all.
Oh, okay. Well,
it is the broadest villain character I've ever seen.
Oh, well, there you go. So, so nobody but Tarantino has really used this guy to his potential, including Sam Mendes, and I like that movie. So, I'm with you. I think that when I saw him in this trailer, I was like, oh, man, like, come on. So maybe there's something in here that reverses that, but I highly doubt it. He'll probably get lynched with vines like the bad guy in the cartoon. So anything else on the BFG?
No, I think we've said a lot on it, all that really needs to be said. I'm just pumped to see it. I finally saw the latest trailer, and it looks as magical as ever. I watched it with my wife, and I just reiterated to her, whether she wanted to hear it or not, that I'm super pumped for this. It's Spielberg, it's Roald Dahl. I mean, the end, you had me at hello, you know, like it's go time.
Yeah, agree. Also that weekend, the third Purge movie, have you seen these movies? Any interest here?
I've seen the first one. The second one, I think, was better reviewed than the first one and actually sounded interesting because it involved, like, getting out in the streets while the Purge is happening. And that's interesting to me. And now it's like, I think the plot this time is Frank Grillo is, like, the head of Secret Service or something, and he's protecting a idealistic presidential candidate.
Yeah.
In the middle of the Purge, out in the streets during the Purge, when there's, like, a hit out on her or something like that. And,
yep.
You know, that's a fun, great B-movie premise. You know, around Halloween time, that sounds like it would be kind of a blast to watch, you know, on a Friday night or something. But I can't promise I'll be in the theater for it.
Yeah, I've been meaning to catch up with those movies. But, yeah, it's more of a rental. And like you said, if you're going to see a movie about, I don't know, I guess it's not a horror franchise, but still, that seems like summer is a weird choice. But then again, 4th of July, I guess, is the... is their weekend that kind of that's where they're sticking. Okay. Anyway, moving on to the next weekend, The Secret Life of Pets, Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates, Captain Fantastic. Anything here?
No, not really. I mean, Adam Devine is in the Wedding Dates movie, which is one selling point, but
that trailer
about it.
Is horrendous.
Yeah.
I saw it the other day before The Nice Guys. Man, what a nightmare. Yeah, we also saw the trailer for Captain Fantastic, which looks good. It looks like the most Sundance movie that's ever been created. Do you know about this movie?
No, I don't even know what that is.
It's Viggo Mortensen plays like this hippie in the woods that like him and his wife had a bunch of kids. And then his wife dies, and they have to go into Portland or whatever city they live near to negotiate, you know, the fallout of her death with her family. And he stands to lose the kids, and it's like the kids' first integration into society. So it's an interesting idea for a story. It looks strong, but it's definitely going for the Little Miss Sunshine. When you see this, you'll feel good about yourself because you saw an independent movie. Crowd, I guess.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I just checked Twitter while you just described that, and I saw a promoted tweet from McDonald's saying Captain Fantastic souvenir cups on the way, everybody.
Yeah, the Happy Meal for that is just going to be artesian bread baskets. So The Secret Life of Pets, I believe this is the Louis C.K. dog movie. Is that correct?
Yeah, strange. I think it's a New York set dog movie, like animated dog. I guess like the most comparable thing just on paper, just in that this is bizarre casting for an animated movie, like a kid-friendly animated movie, is Ants. Was that DreamWorks that
yes,
produced
yes,
Ants?
Their
yeah,
first,
where
yeah.
Woody Allen is the star, it provides the lead voice, like an animated Woody Allen movie. I kind of get that vibe from it, although I haven't seen the trailer for it yet. But, yeah, I just never expected Louis C.K. in a kid's animated movie. The premise, which I'm kind of forgetting, I read about it recently, sounded interesting. But, you know, as a fan of his, I'm intrigued. So I'm waiting to hear more.
Yeah, I can't imagine. It just looks like the most standard. It looks like, speaking of Ants, it looks like the first round of, oh, my God, we can do 3D animated movies and they make a lot of money. It looks like the first round of ideas for every studio except for Pixar on that.
Never mind.
Much interest. So the next weekend has probably the most controversial movie of the summer coming out, and that's Ghostbusters. And that seems to be really the biggest thing that weekend. Franco and I just talked about the trailer controversy. Where do you weigh in on that movie?
I don't really see controversy. It's the most contrived controversy I can think of as it relates to movies in a while. I was disappointed that this fell into the reboot trap, like seemingly everything else, but we just kind of have to suck it up and just assume that pretty much everything is going to get a reboot now, and even if it's just the most unnecessary thing imaginable, or remake, I don't know, like if this is going to reference the continuity, you know, obviously established by those first two movies, but look, it's a female cast. The fact that that angers people just by rule, as a rule, is a disappointing reflection of humanity, you know, more so than the Hollywood studio system. And I mean, like, I don't personally get it. I mean, it seems like a reference reboot or remake of this franchise. I think the trailers that I've seen look fine. I mean, the jokes play fine. The special effects look good. I like Paul Feig. I like Melissa McCarthy and Kristen Wiig, and the SNL performers are talented. But so I don't understand it. I mean, I understand it at the base level of people having really shallow points of view when it comes to this kind of stuff, that you can't possibly remake something with an all-female cast. Like, I hate that I understand it at that level, but maybe going a little more in depth, just in terms of how people think and feel, it makes no sense to me. And it's something that shouldn't be the most disliked video in YouTube history. I can tell you that much. The fact that that's a real thing, again, it's just another disappointing thing about moviegoers. So I don't know. For me, I don't really understand the controversy in that this is just another remake or reboot. Why should it be any worse than any others? And it doesn't look nearly as bad as some we've already gotten.
Yeah. And I'm afraid that, if it makes $600 billion, I hope it does, just so those people can be irritated. But if it does make $600 billion, I think what Hollywood will learn is not that, hey, women can be in successful movies. They'll probably just be like, oh, people like rebooting things from the 80s. and they'll just confirm that bias that they have.
Yeah, we'll get the Goonies, and we'll get Teen Wolf.
Yeah,
and
Back
we'll
to the Future.
It's all Adventures in Babysitting. Yeah. And oh, yeah, I mean, it's like there's the big stuff like Back to the Future and other big stuff that has been made, but they're just going to go for the little things too, I think.
Yeah.
Like stuff that people had, you know, they loved, but not nearly as much as I think some people think, you know. So
right.
You get reboots of things like RoboCop, which is a beloved movie, but it didn't need a remake or a reboot. Poltergeist,
no.
You know, a beloved movie, but golly, like, how strong is that brand, really? You know?
Point Break.
Right, exactly. Like, so I like, and like, again, it goes back to the whole philosophy of you could have made these movies without those fans. Like, you could have had the same exact plot, changed the name of characters, changed the name of the movie, and nobody would have really thought about the movies that you're remaking or rebooting or referencing. I mean, there might have been slight comparisons, but I think for the most part, people would have just looked at them as brand new, original Hollywood studio fare. You know, and if they were forgettable, that's fine. But I personally don't think the brand is really helping a lot of these movies and a lot of these stars who are using them to maybe to launch their respective careers. And look, I don't know. I don't see the point in getting bent out of shape about Ghostbusters. This Ghostbusters. Anyway, I love the first two Ghostbusters movies. They're great, and yeah, they're part of my childhood, and I'll always cherish them. But I've just reached a point now where I just can't get that angry about the system as it is now, because it's just there's just too high a volume of them now to single any one of them out and get worked up about.
And if you're going to get upset, then get upset at one that isn't doing something that's at least somewhat interesting. You know, I mean, it's honoring the tradition of SNL alumnus, and it's using, you know, actors that we don't usually see in a big budget movie. So I think that if you're going to get up in arms about a remake, get up in arms about a lazy one that doesn't really do anything new with the material.
Well, and also, like, does the sight or thought of women assuming the role of men from an original movie, like, or just assuming, or just taking over a movie, like, does that really get under your skin, like, that badly? to where you feel like you have to go express that publicly, or even like if you did this privately, like that gets under your skin. It's like if Idris Elba, like we talked about,
yeah,
the new Bond. Like if Idris Elba is taking over James Bond, I mean, just the mere thought, it honestly has nothing to do with the acting prowess or what Idris Elba would actually bring to the role of James Bond. It's just the fact that it's a black guy playing James Bond. Like the mere fact that could happen just ruins people's day. It makes no sense to me. Like how like you live a sad life if that bothers you that much, and it's just for the wrong reasons too. It's got nothing to do with, again, what he can do and what he can bring in the character itself. It's just because I don't like that. It's like you want to live in a world where you just never see that, where all you watch in movies and TV or whatever, you just want your screen filled with white guys all the time.
Yeah.
And if there's a shred of diversity in the frame, then somebody's making a political statement here, and they're pushing their agenda. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm with you. And again, I would encourage everybody to go listen to our podcast about the other day. So that weekend also has the new Woody Allen movie, at least on the schedule that I'm looking at. Cafe Society. You and Matt talked about this as well a few episodes ago. I think this looks pretty good. The mere presence of Jesse Eisenberg these days makes me want to throw a brick through a window. So that's a bit of an issue. He seems like he's really laying on the Woody impression pretty thick. But it's Woody Allen, so it's always worth a look. And I definitely think the cinematography and production design look absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, it's Woody Allen, like the BFG with Steven Spielberg. If it's a Woody Allen movie, I'm generally in. And, you know, quite honestly, yeah, I mean, the Jesse Eisenberg thing is I wouldn't call it a warning sign, because Jesse Eisenberg has done good work. But it feels like this is kind of what Jesse Eisenberg has been working towards his entire career, being the star of a Woody Allen movie. For whatever reason, and if it works out, great. If he was born to do it, then that's great. And Woody Allen has another young actor he can depend on as his lead in playing the quote-unquote Woody Allen character. But you're right. This movie looks fantastic. There are some great supporting actors who are returning from the Woody Allen universe, like Corey Stoll and Judy Davis. And, you know, I think, you know, despite the whole Twilight thing and the whole, like, what Kristen Stewart has become in the eyes of a lot of movie fans, I still think she's a really talented actress who's done some great work. And I, you know, these two had great chemistry in Adventureland, and I didn't see American Ultra like everybody else, but you know, it seems like they like, you know.
Oh yeah, I never even
each other.
Yeah,
yeah,
I never saw that pattern develop, but yeah, I guess
yeah, it seems like they like making movies together, so that bodes well for what we might see on screen in this. So I don't really have to say much else other than, you know, honestly, this comes up every few years, but the whole Dylan Farrow subplot to Woody Allen's career and how it's kind of popped up again when his son Ronan Farrow wrote the letter in for Hollywood Reporter, and how we're kind of going back to that. Well, it has, I'll be honest with you, as a diehard Woody Allen fan, it is getting a little harder to focus on the movies themselves when this keeps coming up, and there hasn't been, I think, the closure that there needs to be one way or the other to let fans sort of make that decision on, like, well, do I support this guy's art, or do I wait, you know, until I know more about this whole thing. And this is I think a good subject for another podcast, but you know, where do we draw the line? Where do we separate artists from personal lives and what they've done? How does that affect how we watch movies? You know, the obvious ones are Roman Polanski and Woody Allen, and there are a handful of others, certainly. But I can't say that I don't think about that more now when I watch his movies, but I still plan on seeing this because I'm just that big a fan of his work.
Yeah, I definitely think that warrants a discussion. I'm curious to see what all the filmmakers have to say about that. But yeah, I mean, for me, it's, if I'm on the fence with Woody Allen, with a director like I am with Woody Allen, all his movies are not must-sees for me. So
I'll be totally honest that it does sway me sometimes. It's almost, you know, I'll totally admit that the press is just working on me, and it's gotten to a saturation point where it just becomes harder and harder to push out of your mind. So yeah, sometimes I'll just be like, well, I mean, you know, that's kind of making me not want to check out whatever he's got coming out. But at the same time, you know, intellectually, it doesn't matter to me. You know, I still, Chinatown is one of the greatest movies of all time, no matter what Roman Polanski did, or you know, Apocalypse Now, no matter what Francis Ford Coppola, you know, how he treated his wife on set. You know, to the big to the small, you know, there's filmmakers have done horrible things. So I definitely think it's warranted to draw a line there. But yeah, there are definitely times when it's, again, probably because of the media, it's kind of harder to separate that. But I think we should definitely put a pin in that for another show. The next weekend has, we already talked about Star Trek Beyond, but like I said, I'm pretty excited for this. I'm excited to see Justin Lin tackle the action, and I'm excited to see Simon Pegg tackle the story and the sci-fi elements. And I think that there are signs that they are responding to the kind of militarization aspect of Star Trek Into Darkness, which is a movie I loved. So I'm kind of curious to see if they swing back the other direction with this to the more kind of brainy Star Trek. But if you're going to do that, I don't know, maybe don't direct the Fast Five guy. I mean, don't hire the Fast Five guy to direct.
I don't know. I mean, it's an action franchise. It just is. And look, I'm bummed out that there are so many movie nerds out there who just hate blindly almost what J.J. Abrams did with the franchise, with those two movies. Because, look, I think they're the best two Star Trek feature films. I really do. They're just so vibrant and exciting, fun, and it just really established him as a go-to blockbuster director. And introduced, I wouldn't say introduced new characters, but in a way, I mean, they obviously reinvented them and introduced us to really talented young actors who have bright futures and can obviously carry this franchise in a unique way. So, yeah, I'm excited about this. I mean, I'm disappointed that J.J. Abrams isn't back for this, but he obviously had bigger and better things to do with his time. And also, I mean, it's just how the franchise has gone for years. I mean, different directors make Star Trek movies and always have. So it's just, it's kind of like the Bond thing. It's okay. It doesn't belong to one director. I just love what he did with it. And so hopefully they'll, you know, do different things with it, obviously, because that's what they've always done over the years. But hopefully we'll kind of have the same vibe and they'll give us something along the same lines as what Abrams did with those two movies, which to me hold up as just fantastic, fun movie experiences. And Justin Lin is great, and or he's done some great work, and he made Fast Five, right?
He made three, four, five, and six.
So yeah, he made the best, what I think is probably the best Fast and Furious movie, which is Fast Five. So I trust this guy as an action director, and I think it's right for them to trust him as a filmmaker, or to sort of lead this to the next chapter.
Yeah, I'm kind of bugged that there is a stench on this franchise, and I think it's a totally undeserved stench. I think if you take every major, you know, blockbuster of the last 10 years or so, and you pick out the cast, and you ask me, you know, which cast I want to spend the most time with, my answer might be the cast that J.J. Abrams assembled for that first Star Trek movie. I think these people are just great together, and they're so much fun, and I think that the last two movies did keep the spirit of Star Trek alive, and they're not my two favorite Star Trek movies, but they're the top there. And like you said, I like the variety in this franchise, and I think that you know, I think that they could get a good mix here where you get a little bit of both. There's that weird shot of Simon Pegg like jumping out of like a pod and hanging onto a cliff in the trailer that. It's the one thing every time I see it in the trailer for Star Trek Beyond, I'm a little bit put off. It just seems like a weird physics kind of thing. And there is an awful lot of CGI all over this thing. But I guess that's the nature of this. I certainly love the two new posters that they released. I'm pretty excited for this one, and I'm excited not just for this new Star Trek movie, but also the new Star Trek TV show that Brian Fuller, I believe, is developing. So, like I said, I wish it didn't have the stench, but hopefully that it won't last long. Also this weekend we have Ice Age Collision Course. Okay. Also this weekend we have absolutely fabulous the movie. Okay, we'll just move on. So I think the next major thing is going to be Jason Bourne. Where are you at on this?
Yeah. Okay. Like yeah, that's about it. I know that there are a ton of huge fans of what Matt Damon has done with the character, and obviously specifically what he and Paul Greengrass have done with the character. So it's nice that they're back after that Bourne Legacy movie, which is not terrible. It's really not bad, and I think Jeremy Renner just kind of generally gets a bad rap when he does a lot of work that is good enough, if not better. But, you know, I really like these movies, but I'm not what you'd call like a huge mark for Jason Bourne. So I'm just kind of like, all right, let's have fun for 2 hours and then let's move on with our lives. And you know, I don't find myself revisiting these. I mean, if they're on TNT or something and they, you know, that TV happens to be on, I'll definitely sit there and enjoy it. But it's just not a character that has really just totally connected with me, even though I'm glad that it establishes somebody like Matt Damon as a legit action movie star, which I think it definitely did.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of the Greengrass Bourne movies, but I didn't need more of this. But what looks like we're getting in the trailer looks totally in line with the Bourne Supremacy and the Bourne Ultimatum. So I'm cool with that. I'm high on Paul Greengrass after Captain Phillips. Matt Damon is pretty great, and I think he's getting to be one of those stars that really holds a lot of sway, I think, over his screenplays. So I think that, I have hope that he wouldn't have signed up for this if it was going to be subpar. There is an irritating thing in the trailer early on where it's like, CIA guy walking through a control room and he says, there's been a hack. It may be worse than Snowden. And it's one of those totally on the nose, hit you in the face with a frying pan lines that you didn't get in the Paul Greengrass Bourne movies. You know that they were pretty subtle, and not necessarily in the action department, but at least in the politics department, they were. It felt like, I don't know, there was just a reality there, and it didn't seem, it was its own reality, I guess, and it didn't have to name drop real life events. So if this thing brings up Benghazi or something like that, I don't know. I hope that it's not lazy, I guess is the term I'm looking for, where they're just kind of, you know, making just on-the-nose analogies to the real world.
And when did it become an action movie trope where, like, the exiled hero is now just fighting in bare-knuckle boxing matches?
And Troy?
That's where you find them?
Well, no, I'm sorry. Rambo, yeah.
Was it the first Rambo, or was it
no,
the second?
Yeah, it's the second one, and they parody it in Hot Shots Part 2. This is basically Rambo 2.
Yeah. That scene always just keeps coming back. I think they parody it in MacGruber, too. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. But,
yeah,
of course. I mean, it's a third sequel, so I guess it's okay.
Yeah, and I just, again, like I said, I didn't need more of this, and I can't see it going beyond this. I mean, how many times is this guy going to run away, be happy, and come back?
We don't need more of any of this, but we're going to get it, and that just seems like the attitude of pretty much every studio out there. Now, you don't need this, but you're going to get it, and you're probably going to watch it. So just
I'll argue that we need more Marvel and more Star Trek until we die. I'll go ahead and put those two things out there. But, yeah, things like Bourne and Ghostbusters and
everything.
Or Independence Day. Yeah. Okay. Also that weekend, Bad Moms.
Yeah.
Movies with the word bad in the title. Or horrible. What if this was Horrible Moms?
Who's the star of this?
Mila
Kunis?
Yeah, Mila Kunis playing a mother to like 12-year-olds or something like that. Which is a little strange. And the whole trailer is about how unkempt and gross she is as a mom. It's one of these. I saw the trailer yesterday, and it looks like a nightmare. Speaking of nightmares, another trailer that I saw, and it was before The Jungle Book. It was one where I was like blushing in my seat. It looked so bad, and my wife looked at me and said, "We have to watch that because it looks so bad." And it was Nine Lives. Starring Kevin Spacey. Have you heard about this movie?
Yeah, oh yeah. I've seen the trailer.
You have? Okay.
It's like an atomic bomb of what?
How did this happen? There's this Eric Roberts movie called A Talking Cat? ! And it's a really bad movie. They reviewed it on the Eric Roberts is the Effing Man podcast that I've been a guest on. And it's basically, I've never seen the movie, it looks horrible, but it's basically a normal-looking movie, and then every now and then there's this cat whose mouth is, like, overlaid with, like, a black circle that moves, and it's Eric Roberts' voice, and he was recorded in, like, you know, a bathroom or something like that in 15 minutes. And in this trailer does not look too far off from that. Like, they didn't even go to the lengths of animating the cat's mouth to make him talk. It's like Garfield thinking Kevin Spacey thoughts. It's just a pure playground of nightmare fuel.
Yeah, and it's directed by Barry Sonnenfeld.
Right.
Like, that's not even, like, that might be the weirdest part about the whole thing.
And they sell it on his name. They say, from the director of the Men in Black movie.
Oh, my God. And so, Kevin Spacey's the star. Who else is in it? Aren't there other, like, kind of impressive people where you wonder, like, why are they here?
Yeah, Cheryl Hines, I think, from Curb Your Enthusiasm is in it. Jennifer Garner plays... Well, first of all, Kevin Spacey has straight-up white hair in this movie, is married to Jennifer Garner, and has, like, a 6-year-old daughter or something like that. And it's so upsetting. It's kind of like James Caan being the dad in Elf. Like this, but at least there he had an older son. It's just this old man... pretending he's a cat, and at one point the cat is doing pull-ups, and the inner monologue says, "Must show them that I'm human," as if doing pull-ups is the is what separates us from the feline world.
Every so often there are a handful of movies that come along, and you just like look at them and say, "How did this shit get made? Like, how did people spend millions of dollars on this? Like,
why did they think they needed it? Like, that's the thing. It's like Barry Sonnenfeld, I thought, I mean, he's not like riding high, but Men in Black 3 made okay money, and it came out a few years ago, and Kevin Spacey is Kevin Spacey. You know, he like runs his own theater and has House of Cards going for him. So it's like,
is it Disney?
I don't know. It was in front of Jungle Book, so it may be Disney, but Disney, I mean, come on, like they have higher standards than this.
Well, it might be Disney money, you know, that lures actors like that out.
Oh man, it's insane. But again, like if usually when you have these things where people take them for the money, they also throw money at the visual effects, you know, and make it look like the Ninja Turtles movie, you know, where there's a bunch of flashing lights and the CGI over animating everything. But this looks like it was just a bunch of plates of a cat walking around. And then just threw voiceover under it and sent it to the print. Definitely a theater trip there. Okay, so now we're getting into August. We talked about Suicide Squad. Nine Lives was the same weekend as Suicide Squad, so that's brilliant counter-programming. Anything else?
Yeah, way to lead with that one.
Yeah.
No, Suicide Squad, again, it's like number two on my most anticipated of the summer, for sure. And I think it looks great. And like you said, we've been over this and over this. But I think what's interesting, and I didn't really mention this in the Tarzan segment, I think this could be a really big year for Margot Robbie to establish herself as like one of the premier female superstars out there. And somebody who has a bright future as the star of, you know, whether it's tentpole releases or whatever, she should be able to probably name her price and name her movie after this summer. And I think that Harley Quinn could just really blow up. I think our friend Craig mentioned that Harley Quinn, like there's probably zero doubt that that will be like the number one Halloween costume in 2016. And I think it's just going to be a character that could transcend the movie, and obviously there's been an announcement already that there will be a Harley Quinn standalone that Margot Robbie will produce herself, so she's obviously already got a lot of power in Warner Brothers and DC, obviously have a lot of faith in this character and her as an actress, and I think she's a, you know, deservedly so far, a rising star. Obviously she was great in Wolf of Wall Street, and she looks great in this movie, so look out for more Margot Robbie. I hope that the movie finds her something really fun to do, like the character herself. I think it's, she's got a lot of great potential, and hopefully she'll serve the overall purpose, that being the movie Suicide Squad, better than just, again, you know, taking advantage of an opportunity to launch a standalone franchise for some, you know, the character on their own.
Yeah, she's kind of like that. She's in the Chris Hemsworth category of, did Hollywood create this talent in a lab, you know, where she's got all of those qualities that a studio would want in a superstar, and it happens to be just a really good actress on top of it.
Well, it's interesting you bring up Chris Hemsworth, though, because all he really has are the Marvel movies.
He hasn't won a big box office draw.
Yeah. No, I mean, on stuff that he's done on his own, and he's made some good movies. Like, I really like Black Hat and Rush, and I actually enjoyed In the Heart of the Sea, and I think the guy is great. Audiences just haven't responded, other than that first Huntsman movie. This new one was obviously one of the big stinkers of 2016 so far at the box office. So there's a huge question mark around, you know, him as a movie star and a guy who can sell a movie with his name and presence alone. And I think you're exactly right. I think Margot Robbie, she fits the same criteria, and we'll see if she can do that, because she's going to have enormous opportunities after this movie.
I agree. So also in August, we have Pete's Dragon on the, I mean, at this point, gold standard for Film Nerds Unlimited episodes. Craig and Matt did a most anticipated of 2016 episode, and they took the boots to Pete's Dragon, just kind of laughed it off. Where are you on this? It's directed by the guy that directed Ain't Them Body Saints, and I believe he edited some Shane Carruth. I think he edited Upstream Color. The trailer has been released. Where are you at on Pete's Dragon?
I just can't believe they didn't put in the trailer, from the editor of Upstream Color comes Pete's Dragon. No, look, it's in the middle of the pack for me of again, that sort of group of, I can take or leave these movies. And again, like, I'll probably go see this just out of curiosity. And there are some interesting people involved. Robert Redford is in this movie, you know, and I'm anxious to see what the special effects are like, and really, I'm anxious to see how it works with the story. How are they going to tell the story better than they did? What, in the 19, was it the 1970s when they made the first Pete's Dragon movie?
1977, I think. Yeah.
It's been forever since I've seen that. I need to revisit it and make sure I like it, you know, as much.
It's not great. It's not great.
Like, we see things through a different lens, right, back then. And people, it's weird how people take ownership of certain movies and properties and just say, look, I love Pete's Dragon, when they haven't seen it in 30 years, right? And you go back and watch it and you're like, wait, okay, well, maybe that was a movie that could have been done better, right? Had you know, different people been involved, or had they just executed the idea a little bit differently, maybe that's one of those movies. Like, remakes to me, like, I'd like to see less of them, but if they're going to do it with something that had potential that wasn't realized, and maybe Pete's Dragon's one of those movies. So maybe they've got a big opportunity here.
Well, it's what I like in remakes is, you know, recontextualize it either for a culture of, you know, a nationality or something like that, or time. And I feel like Pete's Dragon was such a product of the 70s children's movie, you know, the Apple Dumpling Gang kind of style of movie, and it's charming for that, but it's also like, it feels like it's 2.5 hours long, it's real rambling, and there's not a whole lot of ongoing tension in there. So I think that it was ripe for a remake. It's one of the Disney movies I think kind of really could benefit for one, and I think that this approach that the directors come up with, which is a really earthy kind of rural approach, I think is neat, and I think that's the way to do it. So I get like a Where the Wild Things Are vibe from this, and I think that's a really great approach if they can keep it you know, tense and interesting and not go too soft.
Yeah, and it's like beams of sunlight through trees, the movie, is what I mean from that trailer. But, you know, what's a little disappointing, too, about it is that movie represents a certain style of filmmaking in that you're blending 2D animation with live action, and that predated, obviously, Who Framed Roger Rabbit and other movies that tried it and succeeded, some that failed. Clearly, I'm looking at you, Looney Tunes, back in action. But,
Cool World.
Yeah, so,
Bay
you know,
Bay's Kids.
Yeah, and look, I saw Bebe's Kids at the theater, bro. So I'll go ahead on Bebe's Kids. And hopefully Tone Loc is in this movie, too, I should say.
Believe he is.
Yeah. so I kind of missed that, but you start to count the number of times that it worked, and you start running out of fingers, you know? And so, you know, what's sad about it is that that's probably, you know, outside of this Space Jam sequel that's supposedly happening, that's something that we'll probably never see again or just not see very often. And I understand that CG is essentially the equivalent of that in terms of blending computer animation and live action. So, you know, if they had CG back then that's probably how they would have made Pete's Dragon or Who Framed Roger Rabbit or whatever. So I can't complain too much. I just, you know, this is just me saying I miss 2D animation, and I just thought that was just such a wonderful concept to blend those two, and I wish it's something that they did again. And all I'm going to be thinking about when I see this animated dragon, this 3D animated dragon, is, man, wasn't it great when it was 2D?
Yeah. Yeah, and from the design, it kind of looks like they're really evoking that original design, and whatever I say about the overall movie of Pete's Dragon, the design and voice characterization of Elliot the dragon in Pete's Dragon is great. It's one of those amazingly just Disney things, and it was a big part of my childhood. So the fact that they're kind of approximating that in CGI is maybe not the best idea. Maybe you should just do something new, but at the same time, you know, it's with all these Disney live-action remakes, which is another conversation we've had and can probably keep having, you know, the money is in reminding people of what they like. So it makes perfect sense that they would keep it, you know, reminiscent of that original design. Speaking of animated classics and Disney movies, this weekend also sees the animated children's movie Sausage Party.
Well, this is on my list of must-sees this summer.
Really?
And,
okay.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think it'll be hilarious. And this has been a passion project of Seth Rogen's and Evan Goldberg's for a long time. They've literally been talking about this for like the past 5 or 6 years or so, insisting that they're making it seem like one of those projects that would fall through the cracks in development hell, but it seems to have really happened, and we're going to see this. It's also a cruel joke on parents everywhere throughout the country, in that pretty much every kid is going to want to see this because it's probably going to get a wide release, and it will fool some parents into taking their kids to watch this, and they'll probably figure it out in the first 2 minutes or so that they need to leave now because it's supposedly pretty reprehensibly dirty. So I just think, you know, it's a crazy concept that I'm totally into, seeing this hard R-rated CG or 3D animated movie, but I'm a little worried about just, like, the hit the studio or whoever is going to take here, because there's going to be some intense blowback. I mean, that shouldn't matter to us as fans of the work of these guys, and that should only make us laugh, but it's going to be an interesting risk and experiment.
Yeah, I mean, this is the year where parents were taking their kids to Deadpool because it was about a guy in a mask. Pretty silly stuff. The thing that for me, I know you're a fan of Team America World Police, but for me, that movie, it's a one-joke movie, and it runs out of steam, and I feel like that this has the potential to be that, you know, where it's more of a great idea that two guys have when they're sitting around smoking weed, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to translate into a compelling feature-length comedy, but I'm a fan of This Is the End, and I totally admire something different and such a clever subversion of what we all know, you know, this Hollywood money-making cash cow at this point of the 3D animated movie with anthropomorphic objects. I think that it could be a really fun takedown of Pixar in a gentle or loving way. And, so I think there's a lot of potential, but I'm also skeptical for those reasons.
I'm going to disagree with you about Team America. You're right. I do love it. And they really went balls to the wall and all in on that. And I think they made a great movie and that never ran out of laughs for me. And I just never really felt like it ran out of creative steam from beginning to end. I mean, I think the obviously the puppet animation and the set pieces are just phenomenal in that. And, you know, I think this has potential to be something like that. I mean, these guys are gifted writers and gifted performers, and I think that, you know, like I said, they've been working on this for so long and trying to make it happen, and it's probably been something that has consumed them creatively and probably personally that they can't help but put their hearts into it. And I think the trailer was fantastic. I laughed my head off, and I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. I agree with you. It's a risk, and there's definitely potential for this to be a one joke experience for all of us, but I don't know. I kind of have faith in these guys, and yeah, I like This Is the End too. But you know, the problem I think with this group, the Rogan crew, is I just feel like a lot of their comedy is just not going to age very well, and hasn't really aged well so far in a few ways, and it's just because of these so very specific pop culture references they make in a lot of their offhand and often improv humor. You know what I mean? So you look at something like Knocked Up, which is a really funny movie and certainly holds up, I think, overall. But I mean, there are these throwaway scenes where the guys are in the club and they're talking about how badass a movie Munich is, right? So like in 30 years, like I love Munich more than anybody, but in 30 years, if I'm going back and watching this and I don't have as strong familiarity with that movie as somebody like you or me who love it, I'm going to be like, wait, what was Munich? And like, okay. And they're just like jokes. And This Is the End about movie stardom and very specific people making cameos, sort of subverting their images and making comments about themselves, even self-referential stuff. Just like the overabundance of these references, I think are going to eventually come back to bite them long term, but certainly in the moment, it's a blast.
Yeah, and I think again, because of this is such a specific conceit, I think that, and because of the work that has to go into animating, you'll probably get a little less of that improv humor and more well planned out and well staged jokes, which is encouraging. So I'm looking at the rest of the summer here, and I'm just going to list some movies that. Honestly, I can only see one in here that looks close to interesting, and I don't even know if it's going to get a wide release. So I've got Ben-Hur, the remake of that. I think it's Timur Bekmambetov.
Well, and one of my wild card picks for the next James Bond, Jack Houston, is the star of that. So that guy was great. He was great on Boardwalk Empire.
Oh, is he A. Houston, like of John and
yes,
and Danny
believe,
and
I believe
Angelica.
He's Angelica Houston's nephew, but
okay.
he's London born, so he's qualified for Bond. But no, I look again. Pretty much everything we've already said about remakes and reboots applies to Ben-Hur too.
Yeah, and it just looks like that the cottage industry of 300 remakes, of the movie 300. Pompeii, and it's it looks like more of that. War Dogs looks like complete torture. It's a Todd Phillips movie starring Miles Teller and Jonah Hill. It's a really interesting idea for a story about guys that kind of weasel their way into government contracting and selling weapons to foreign countries. Really good idea for a film, and I saw the trailer before the Nice Guys, and I can't watch this movie.
No, when you said Todd Phillips, Miles Teller, Jonah Hill, I had checked out and started staring at the ground.
Well, I mean, Jonah Hill is I don't want to get personal or anything, but I'm worried about the guy. Like his screen presence is becoming so haggard, and he's gained back a lot of the weight. He's really gained back more weight, it looks like, and he's older now. And I don't know, the way that his star image is based around how sloppy and schlubby of a guy is, and I don't know. I feel like we should have evolved beyond that at this point. You know, like, we lost John Belushi, we lost Chris Farley and John Candy. Do we really need to ask our actors to be the ugly fat guy? Like, why can't we, you know, encourage them to take care of themselves? It just concerns me.
Well, you're talking about two-time Oscar nominee Jonah Hill, by the way.
And, I mean, and he can totally be good. I love him in Moneyball. He's fantastic in that movie.
Yeah, you know, I'm not Jonah Hill's biggest fan. It's hard to deny the guy is talented and funny. I'm just, you know, it's just not always my cup of tea, necessarily. And, look, Miles Teller, we make a lot of jokes about Miles Teller, to be sure. But Whiplash, which I think you still haven't seen.
No, I haven't.
I watched it again on TV, like, just on cable the other night. It is a great movie. I love that movie so much. And it proved Miles Teller can be in a great movie. Miles Teller can make a substantial contribution to a great movie. So anything is possible, but I'm not sure War Dogs, I'm not sure much is possible in War Dogs.
Yeah, it looks
we'll feed our words. I don't know.
It looks to engage their worst instincts of just screaming and talking fast and making spectacles of themselves.
War Bros.
Oh, God. The Space Between Us. I believe this is the Dave Matthews documentary. Moving on. That's Kubo and the Two Strings is the one that I believe this is a Leica film. And I think, again, I'm not sure if it's even going to get a wide release, but that one looks kind of interesting.
Yeah, so this is the studio that made Coraline and Paranorman, correct?
Yes, and they did The Box Trolls, which I did not see.
Yeah, so this just kind of reached out and bit me when I was just kind of looking through the calendar. It sounds great. Like, the plot sounds great. It's got a good voice cast, and I have not seen anything but a poster, and I haven't seen a trailer if one exists yet. But, I mean, just on paper, this sounds like a must-see this summer, so... And I like those first two movies that we mentioned, Coraline and Paranorman. I really like those movies a lot, certainly the visual design of them. So if nothing else, it'll have that. But this sounds like a really fun movie.
Yep. And then we've got some other ones on my list. Max Steel, Mechanic Resurrection.
Huh?
And we skipped over The Founder, which is the McDonald's movie starring Michael Keaton. Directed by John Lee Hancock. I feel like that has the potential to be really good. It's an interesting story. And I like it's kind of like Three State of Jones, where it's, oh my God, a real movie during the summer. Let's see what that's like.
Yeah. Michael Keaton, the reemergence continues. I mean, the guy's hot, and that's great. As fans of Michael Keaton, we couldn't be happier for the guy that he's found this second wind, and he's made really good movies, and I'm glad he's getting these starring opportunities. Who doesn't want to know how McDonald's came to be, you know? And the story does sound interesting, and it seems like he's playing not the nicest of people in the world, so it'll be interesting to see, like, how a director like John Lee Hancock, who has made these feel-good movies so far, pulls off an anti-hero.
Yeah, absolutely. So unless I skipped over something, that's the summer. As usual, it just kind of fizzles out with a bunch of releases that the studios didn't know what to do with, so they just dropped them in August. Any kind of overall thoughts before we close out?
Well, again, I just go back to the overall list that I made of must-see or want-to-see, and no thanks, and the want-to-see list is longer than any of the others, so that's probably good, and I probably underestimated how I feel about this summer looking ahead. I think the high notes seem very high, and it's certainly off to a good start with Captain America, so give it time. Maybe this will be a great summer. There just are a bunch of stinkers in there, at least on paper, that I can't say that, you know, I will go see, can't guarantee that, or that I would even see. So it's pretty much just like every other summer.
Yep, exactly. And like you said, it started off on a great note. I mean, real quick, I think the only ones, trying to just look at it, the ones that I'm definitely going to see, barring like incredible reviews for something else, I'll see X-Men just to stay consistent there. I'd like to see Popstar. I don't know if I can. It kind of depends on the reviews if I'll be able to prioritize that for a theater trip. Finding Dory is an essential one to see in the theater. I'll probably end up seeing Independence Day Resurgence in the theater. Definitely Tarzan, BFG, and definitely Star Trek. And, man, that might be it.
So Tarzan is a definitely for you.
Tarzan is a definite for me. I'm a big fan of David Yates. He made four really, really, really good movies in a row. I like jungle movies, and I think the trailer looks strong. So, yeah, I would not wait for Redbox on that if I'm really gonna commit myself to seeing it. I might as well see it on a big screen.
Interesting. All right. Well, good for it.
Yeah, but I mean, honestly, for me, that's a pretty slim list. Again, I've got a kid at home, so maybe that might be impacting my plans. I think it doesn't look like a great year, but at the same time, I said that in the past and it turned out to be really good. So I think there's still plenty to be excited about, and I definitely appreciate your time. We covered a lot of ground here.
I appreciate your time, Ben. I feel bad for you as the editor of this.
Oh no, but believe me, I 120 episodes of this thing, and I've done like 3 minutes of editing total.
For more Film Nerds Unlimited, go to filmnerds.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you like what you hear, rate and review our podcast on iTunes. Keep an eye out for the next issue of Film Nerds Unlimited, coming soon.